Now we come to lesson number 22 in the book of 1 Samuel. We're in chapter 13, verse number 8. We are in the second year of Saul's reign as king. He is in the second year. He has not started his third year as king yet. He is at Gilgal, where he has retreated to from Michmash. The Philistines have gathered back at Michmash, and the soldiers in the army who are with Saul at Gilgal have heard that the Philistines are at Michmash, and they have scattered and began to tremble. But Saul stood still there with a few faithful soldiers. So now we come to this story that is, if this is in chronological order, and I think it is, it's happening right here in the second year. Our writer comes and tells us the story of the failure of Saul to obey. And I'm going to tell you this. This is when Saul is going to learn that the kingdom, in his kingdom, and he as king, none of his sons are going to hold the kingship of the rule over Israel to go on down through history, as would be expected. Now, Ishbosheth is going to take the throne for 2 years, then he's going to be beheaded when we get into 2 Samuel. And King David, the line's going to change from a Benjamite named Saul. It's going to change to a Judite, a person of the tribe of Judah, by the name of King David. So we come to the point where Saul was to wait, and he waited for Samuel, and then because Samuel did not show up, Saul proceeded on his own without Samuel, verse number 8. Now he waited 7 days, according to the appointed time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from King Saul. Every notable commentary connects this sentence here in verse number 8 to Samuel's instruction to Saul to go to Gilgal and to wait for Samuel to come to him to give him instruction. They connect it back to 1 Samuel chapter 10 verse 8, and it was the fourth instruction that Samuel gave to King Saul outside of Samuel's house when Samuel consecrated Saul to be the king, the next king. There in chapter 10, verse 8, Samuel said to Saul, "And you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings, and you shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." Throughout this study, we have taken the position that the writer completely ignored recording the meeting of Saul and Samuel after Saul, or the first meeting, after Saul prophesied with the prophets back on the hill of God there at Gibeah. Some commentators take the position that this reference here in chapter 13, verse 8, is the required meeting, even though it took place at least a year or more after Saul was consecrated. And Saul and Samuel had been together several times, as we've already studied, at Gilgal before this meeting. Some take the position that the writer is inserting the details of that meeting here, even though they are out of order. Some, a third group, take the position that this is a totally different meeting, and the first meeting was simply left unrecorded. So what is the truth? Well, harmonizing the sentences of chapter 10, verse 8, and chapter 13, verse 8, is difficult. And I have held my thoughts until this place in the text. Let me state my opinion about this now. First, the meeting with Saul and Samuel in Gilgal after Saul prophesied with the prophets on the hill of God, as required back in chapter 10, verse 8, was not recorded in the scripture. Just not recorded. Second, this meeting with Saul and Samuel in chapter 13, verse 8, is a totally separate meeting with the two men. It was not the second meeting with Saul and Samuel at Gilgal, because the two had been there together several times by this time in the recorded history in our Bible. So third, what does that mean? So we have to ask the question, why is this subsequent meeting with Samuel holding Saul to the 7-day, why is Samuel holding Saul to the 7-day requirement at this meeting like he did at the first meeting? So a clue to this is going to be, by the way, we haven't read that Saul is going to hold him to the 7 days, but we're going to get to it. What we just read was Samuel did not show up on at the time that Saul expected Samuel to show up on the 7th day. So Saul disobeyed. So we ask this question, why is Samuel going to hold Saul to this requirement? We'll get to that in just a second. And here's the clue to answer that question. It's actually found back in chapter 10, verses 6 through 8, and it says this, "Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you mightily, and you shall prophesy with them and be changed into another man. It shall be when these signs come to you, do for yourself what the occasion requires, for God is with you. And you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. You shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." Now I want you to notice in that third instruction from Samuel to Saul, Samuel told Saul that he would prophesy by the Spirit of God on the hill of God with the prophets. Then the clue comes in verse 5, that says, when Samuel said this, "It shall be when these signs come to you, do for yourself what the occasion requires, for God is with you." In other words, after the Spirit of God has come upon Saul as king, he was to act as king in everything he did as the occasion required. Then, when Saul needed to know what to do as king, because he didn't know, he was to go down to Gilgal and wait for Samuel. That's the clue in verse 10, verse 8, that says, "And you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. You shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." In other words, when Saul needed to know what to do as king, he was to go to Gilgal, and Samuel would come to meet him there in 7 days. Notice also that at Gilgal, Samuel would offer the burnt offerings and the sacrifice offerings for Saul before telling Saul what he needed to do as king. We must not forget that Saul was not a Levite. He was not a Levite priest. And therefore, he could not make the offerings. It took Samuel to make the offerings for Saul because Samuel was a priest. Now, what we are saying here is this. It seems that on Saul's dedication day, Samuel promised Saul that they would meet at Gilgal, close to Saul's hometown of Gibeah, and there Samuel would entreat the Lord for Saul's direction as king. Here, in chapter 13, verses 7 and 8, Saul is in a predicament and he does not know what to do. And once again, the text says, "But as for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people following him trembling. Now he waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him." So because Saul knew that he needed to wait for Samuel to present the offerings and give him a word from the Lord, Saul waited 7 days. How did Samuel know when Saul was waiting for Samuel to arrive in Gilgal when Saul needed him. Did Saul send a message to Samuel? We do not know. But it does not seem that Saul had to tell Samuel he needed to speak with him. In reality, we will find in the rest of 1 Samuel that Samuel always knew when Saul needed him because Samuel was a true prophet and the Lord was in constant communication with Samuel, directing his every path. So, Saul waited for 7 days, and get this, and then he jumped ahead of Samuel here in verse number 9. So Saul said, "Bring to me the burnt offering and the peace offering." And he offered the burnt offering. When Samuel did not come early on the 7th day, Saul jumped ahead and performed the offering himself for himself. Saul did not have the religious right to make these offerings. Samuel, as the high priest, was assigned the duties of making the offerings and giving him instructions. Saul has failed early on in his kingship. He has failed. He is in sometime during his 2nd year as king. My, how do we know that Saul jumped ahead of Samuel? We find that next. For Saul met Samuel as Samuel arrived in Gilgal on the, get this, the 7th day. Chapter 13, verse number 10. As soon as he had finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and to greet him. Samuel was not late. Not at all. He was not late. Saul was impatient. It's the first clue in the scripture that tells us of the impatience of Saul in his actions as king. But it is also the first clue that Saul tended to try to cover up his sin when Samuel arrived. Notice in this verse that Saul went out to meet Samuel when he saw him coming instead of waiting for Samuel to arrive there at the altar site. In other words, Saul was caught. It won't be the last time Saul does this. Saul should have known better. He should have trusted Samuel completely, but he did not. He should have also expected to be questioned by Samuel. After all, as we will discover in the rest of Samuel's ministry with Saul, Samuel seemed to always know what Saul was doing. Even though Samuel would ask Saul what he had done, Samuel already knew. Verse number 11. But Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the appointed days, and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, therefore I said, 'Now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not asked the favor of the Lord.' So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." At this point in the story, one of the significant characteristics of Saul's personality begins to show. Saul was a blame shifter. Nothing was ever his fault. In this case, Saul committed his sin because the people were scattering from me, he said, and that you did not come within the appointed days, and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash. So Saul's sin was because of the Israelite warriors, the Philistine warriors, and because of Samuel. None of it was because of himself. Then comes the therefore in that sentence. Therefore. And Saul makes the whole thing worse when he uses the word therefore. He says, therefore, the Philistines were assembling, will come down against me at Gilgal, and I've not asked for the favor of the Lord. Therefore. Of the six excuses, they were all the faults of other people. All the faults of others, except the last. And how bad was the last one? Saul simply forgot to pray. Saul's statements are great examples of how people, caught in their sin, blame others for making them sin. And, as with Saul, if he was guilty of any part of the sin, it was because of something that seems innocent enough and everyone would understand. I have not asked the favor of the Lord. In other words, oops, I forgot. He just could not leave it there. He had to make one more excuse. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. Basically, Saul is saying this. I didn't want to do it, but I had to force myself to do it. Well, in the area of sin, it goes like this. If you force yourself to sin, you are the one who sinned, and you are without excuse. You did it. You are responsible for your own sin. It does not matter what anyone else did. They did not sin. You did. In reality, Saul's admission made things worse. He admitted to a greater sin than all the others. He, by offering the burnt offering, placed himself in a role that the Lord did not ordain him to have. Since the days of the Exodus, the ordained priest presided over all offerings. Saul may have been the king. He may have been a prophet, but he was no priest. The priest office was designed for a certain line of men, the men of the tribe of Levi. Saul was a Benjamite. Saul crossed a grave line and he broke the commands of the Lord. In the Lord's plan, the people brought their offerings to the priest. The priest presided over their worship. Saul did not have the authority to do it for himself. And in addition, let us pretend that Saul was a priest. In that case, he could have brought his offering to the Lord. But a different priest, get this, would have had to preside over it because a priest was not allowed to preside over his own offering before the Lord. So with that, Saul was totally out of line either way, but he wasn't a priest. He did not have the right in any way to preside over the worship of the burnt offerings for himself. What have you done? Samuel asked. He had committed a grave sin against the Lord. Let us not forget for one moment one point in this passage. In verse 10, the writer told us, as soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. What is the point in covering that verse again? I can tell you this. It is a reminder that it was not Samuel who sinned, because he indeed arrived on the seventh day. It was Saul who sinned by not trusting the Lord that Samuel would come in time to perform the offering and tell him what to do, just as he was instructed. The Lord had Samuel there in perfect timing. Now, we spoke about Saul's character flaw of being a blame shifter. In the rest of Saul's life and story, we are going to find this to be true several times. It was his character. But the seed of three other character flaws of Saul's life are planted in this passage also and will repeatedly occur in Saul's life. So we've got one being a blame shifter, being impatient, but we've got three others that I want to pick out and show to you. He was impatient. He was not faithful. He did not have self-control. Okay, he was impatient. He was not faithful. He did not have self-control. Okay, three of the fruits of the Spirit. Get this? Three of the characteristics of a person who truly trusts in the Lord with all their hearts are: they are patient, they are faithful, and they have self-control, meaning he is willing to wait on the Lord before he acts. Remember Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control." Okay, you might ask the question, where does blame shifter fit in that? Where does the blame shifter fit into the characteristics of a person who truly trusts in the Lord? It falls under the characteristic of goodness in that list. Goodness, in this case, is the opposite of badness. It is the character that makes the person lovable and righteous. No one likes a blame shifter. They are not lovable. They are not righteous. They are not righteous under the Lord in any way. Thus, in this one instance at Gilgal, the storyline has planted the seed of the character of King Saul being in opposition to four of the fruits of the Spirit. The only ones left are love, joy, peace, kindness, and gentleness. That's what remain. Hang on. Before we end the story of Saul, he had trouble with all the fruits of the Spirit of those who totally trust in the Lord God. Well, in Saul's second year as king of Israel, he has sinned greatly against the Lord. Now, how bad was his sin? I'm telling you, it was terrible. As we discovered when we saw Saul reprimanded by Samuel. Here we are, we're going to see Saul reprimanded by Samuel, verse number 13. Samuel said to Saul, "You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Then Samuel arose and went up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. Oh my! Saul's sin was so bad that Samuel reprimanded him, and he revealed two things. First of all, he revealed that Saul's kingdom would not endure. And second, the Lord was seeking Saul's replacement. Why? It was because Saul did not keep what the Lord had commanded him to do. So let us deal with this first punishment as we end this lesson. What did it mean when he said to Samuel said, "For the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not endure"? We have already seen that the Lord hand out this punishment before with another person in the text. It was with Eli and as the high priest. If you remember, Eli failed to control his worthless sons who were acting sinfully as a priest with the people. Years before Saul was king, years before Saul became king, the Lord spoke to Samuel when he was just a boy and told him about Eli's sin. And when questioned by Eli, Samuel told Eli what the Lord told him. And the Lord told him that the Lord had made up his mind and Eli's two sons would die on the same day. And in addition, the lineage of Eli would be cut off forever from serving as high priest. The Lord was already ready in the process of choosing the new line of Aaron to serve as the high priest, if you remember. Eli died on the same day as his two sons. Zadok became the high priest, and his descendants as high priest served as high priest from that time on. And even into the days of Jesus, the high priest were all direct descendants of Zadok. Eli's priestly line would not endure. It would be cut off, and another line of Aaron would take the high priesthood, and his descendants would fill that office forever. So let us pause for just a moment. And we're going to see that just like what the timing of Eli's and what happened with Zadok and how it all occurred exactly as it was supposed to happen. And the same thing, in the same way, is promised to Saul by Samuel, that your line will not endure. I have some more to say about this, but we will have to wait until our next time together to talk about that.